Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi guys, I'm May and welcome to the second season of Phenomenal and Asian, a podcast aimed to redefine the Asian stereotype and share inspirational stories of those doing phenomenal things. This week's Phenomenal Asian is Kim Addis, an actress well known for her lead role as Kitty in the show Get Even. Originally born in the Philippines, Kim came to the UK when she was just 8 years old and has always had a love for acting. But she couldn't afford to go to acting school, so her career journey was definitely not easy, and she almost even gave up on her acting dreams. Since we last spoke, Kim has already been casted for incredible new shows like Netflix's Witcher, and I know one day she will be an award-winning actress. So watch this space, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, Kim.
Hi, May. Hey.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Oh, it's been such a long time since
I
we
know.
Last
I know.
Thank you so much for agreeing. This is exciting.
I know. This is so cool. Thanks so much, May.
I've always been a huge fan. And then I've been following you, obviously, over the last couple of years. And I'm just so proud of you, excited for you. Get Kim on my podcast before she blows up. I think I'm just really interested as well because you are a rising star, like in the industry that you're in. We'll start from the beginning because, like, I always kind of just want to know where people, like, where you grew up. Because are you Filipino?
Yeah, Filipino through and through.
Yeah, which is actually rare to find because I find like all the people on my podcast are mainly Chinese Malay or something like that.
Yeah,
because I'm Chinese. Like, my dad is from Hong Kong and my mom is from Burma, but she's Chinese, so technically I'm Chinese, but
lovely. Wow.
Well, so okay, so where were you born then? Yeah, let's start from there.
So way from the beginning, yes, I was born in Cebu City, Philippines. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was born there, raised there for a bit, and then I moved to the UK when I was, I can remember, I think it was around 8 years old.
Okay.
Yeah, in my youthful years, I would go back, like, ever so often as a summer holiday, and then it stopped at one point because I was working, you know, being an adult and like paying the bills. Because, you know, when you're working in London, it's pretty hard. I'm sure you know. Because
yeah,
I know with Eric, you have these like loads of opportunities for young artists to kind of breakthrough and hustle, and I was the same thing. I was like, what is this? Like, I'm working so many part-time jobs and I'm not making enough. It's just weird. But yeah, I missed out. I think I haven't been back since I was 22.
Oh wow. Okay.
And now I'm 28, so it's been
a while.
But I've always had really wonderful memories in the Philippines, and kind of, and I always say this in like some interviews, that I'm always grateful that I've learned through being humble and trying to know where your roots are, but also kind of remember that everyone is just on the same boat and everyone's trying to support one another. It's not just a competition, you know. Sometimes it is. It feels like the industry is trying to eat you up, but I don't know, being brought up as a Filipino is always nice when I see a Filipino really doing well and I don't know them. I'm always super supportive and I'm just like, Yeah, you do you, man. So yeah, that's
I love that. I love that. So how come you came over here? Was that your parents?
Yeah, it was a family, so we kind of moved here in Burnley.
Oh,
Lancashire. Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, so I used to have a Burnley accent.
No way.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's so funny because I'm actually meeting someone, like a mate of mine, next week who's from Burnley, and I'm like, every time I meet them, my northern accent starts playing up. Because now I'm just kind of neutral.
Yeah, you have a very neutral accent, actually. You couldn't pinpoint where. I wouldn't say northern though.
No, I wouldn't say northern now. but yeah, I was raised there when I was eight, so I pretty much lived my beginnings of my life in the Philippines and then in the UK. So I have these like two worlds. And it's always kind of interesting. People are so interested, especially with the accent. They're like, where are you from?
Yeah.
Can't pinpoint where you're from.
And what was like Burnley like as, you know, the only Asian girl, were you?
Yeah. For like a couple of years, I was kind of like, the odd one out. It's kind of like, oh, you're from the Philippines. And
did you hate it? Were you?
Not really. That's the thing. When I look back, I have this kind of innate kind of confidence in me that I'm like, I am like a unique person, I've got brown skin. But also you do feel a bit lonely in a sense, that it's like, okay, this is like a new world, this is my new life, I have to make friends and I have to kind of start socializing or else I wouldn't kind of, I guess be like the odd one out, and that does feel kind of alienating, especially as a young kid. But I was always very resilient, and it's always that word, like Asians are resilient, but it is like I own that, and I always have to push through. And just kind of like living through those years, it was kind of not too hard, but it was just really weird. And then in high school, I think that was the same thing, until I found my own tribe of people who were just not judgmental. I was never in the popular crowd ever. People knew about me because I was the Filipino, until I met one of my good friends who was like Filipino. Because I knew there were some Filipinos out there in Burnley. And she was in the older year. So she's like 1 year older than me. And till this day, we still keep in touch. But it was nice, like in high school, that's when I found kind of my own voice. Because, you know, teenage years is kind of that pinnacle moment where you're trying to find yourself. And it was still hard. Like I got bullied. You know, I guess for being different. And then looking back, I'm like, I wouldn't change it for a bit, because now over the years, especially in university, I think university is that moment where I really found my confidence. I always think that if you have setbacks and you have challenges, it always makes you more stronger down the road.
I was exactly the same as you. I really don't think I felt comfortable myself until university.
Yeah.
I mean, was there anything that you were doing or telling yourself to kind of get through that?
Yeah, I guess just being strong-minded. I think I get that through my mum a lot, of just being very, I guess, reassuring yourself that it's going to be fine. Because if you don't have that mindset of trying to push through, you're always going to be in that stagnant stage. And also I was very kind of a kooky creative kid, so I would always try and go to AMDRAMS, like amateur dramatics, like go to theater school. I think it was called Basics Junior Theater School. That's when I found like, oh, I can sing, act and dance, and then I really enjoyed it, but still found myself a little bit like the odd one out. Because I'm one of those like dark skinned Asian girls, you know, like really tanned. And so people would be like, oh, okay. Until like I started, you know, building my confidence up, then people started to kind of, I guess, like me. And, you know, I found my voice and I started to, you know, socialize. And I always loved performing, and it was kind of my own extension of expressing myself.
Yeah, that's interesting actually. So I wonder whether that's why you enjoyed the theatre acting.
Yeah, definitely. I think that was a way just to, I guess, meet new people, because I've always loved to, you know, find a fresh face and get to know them. Especially through my work now, I've always been inspired by, you know, people's mannerisms and how they kind of work through their mind, and just interested in human beings in general. So I've always been like an empathic person. Yeah, to this day. And I think I thank that, especially going to, you know, basics, junior theatre school, or like the Burnley Youth Centre. Yeah, I did a lot of, you know, like musicals, like every weekend. I just enjoyed it, and I enjoyed just playing around and just having fun as a kid.
Is
And
that was that
then,
your tribe then? When you said tribe, that was kind of the friends that you met
yeah,
through
pretty
theatre.
much. And then some of them obviously didn't do drama, but I just loved being around with them. And it's funny because, yeah, they still do keep in touch, I think, some of them. And I'm just kind of like, it's wacky that they can still remember me. Just because I was, yeah, I was just that kooky kid who just, I wasn't that cool. Like, you know, when you get all those cliques, I was never in that like popular group at all. I was quite
But
a
this is the best bit about
nerd.
being Asian though, is because we are so different but we're memorable. Do you know what I mean? Like
Yes.
being the only Asian kid in the school is actually a benefit now.
Yeah, and I guess growing up in the northern part, it's very much like, wow, we haven't seen a Filipino. I think now it's more diverse. I don't know if you can agree. I feel now here there's a lot more of an Asian community, and it's very, I think people support it. I definitely support, but this climate, especially, you know, politicians and stuff, I don't know if it's like there is a strong Asian support. I think that's why everyone is like, stop Asian hate, because everyone is so divided. And it's a shame. And I think that's why I loved moving from Burnley and studying in London. Like, I experienced so much diversity and so much inclusion. And I've met so many people from all walks of life that I feel like that's how it should be anyway. I feel like people should be exposed to different cultures and know that it's okay. Like, it's not scary. It's not like it's something of an alien nature. Like, it should be celebrated. Yeah. Anyway.
No, that was,
Sorry.
I love that. No, that was so powerful. I couldn't agree more. When you were obviously at drama school, theatre, did you just always want to go into that industry? Like, how did you move to London?
Yeah, so I actually wish that I went to a proper drama school, like, excuse me, wanted to audition, but that didn't come into fruition because you had to pay. I don't know if they still do it now, but you had to pay for the auditions. I think it was around like the £50 mark, and I'm like, wow, this is quite a lot of money. And what if I don't get in and I've just paid for like the audition fee? So I didn't do that. And I went on, I think it's UCAS, isn't it? And I applied for like a couple of universities. Two of them were in London, if I could remember. One of them was Sheffield, and like one of them was in Leeds. And the strangest thing was all of them was no, except for Westminster Uni, which is in London. And the thing is, I didn't even get my grades it has to be three B's, and I got two B's and a C, but they still wanted me in. So I was kind of like, wow, like I feel like the stars are aligning, because I really wanted to move to London, and it happened. And it was literally one of the best years of my life. Like, still this day, I absolutely loved being in university, and I did journalism. So I graduated a BA in journalism. But I really, I don't know, because I wanted to do fashion journalism or some sort of kind of like photography, like photojournalism, but it just didn't really interest me. Because throughout my university years, I did a drama society. So we had like a drama club. I joined that. And then I joined the musical theatre society. So I still had that acting bug in me ever since. And I really enjoyed it. And then our university, like every year, would go to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. I auditioned. I think it was for Alice in Wonderland. I did not get in. I got rejected.
What were you going for?
I think it was Alice.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy was like, yeah, you're great, but no, we're moving on to another
person. You're not white.
You're not.
They were like, we haven't seen a Filipino Alice yet.
No. I'm sure she was lovely doing her role. But I was like, okay, cool. I'm used to it. Because I always audition like every year and I never get it. Anyway. I did that. And
can I just ask, like, is that a bit of a knockdown? Like, sometimes I'm like, how do actors know that they're good at acting, or, you know, singers or musicians are good at singing?
Well, see, the thing is, I always, because I'm very confident at what I do. If I can do it well, I'm confident in it. And I always, whenever I audition, like, yeah, you would get a little bit disheartened, but I always knew that something bigger was going to happen, but I didn't know what. But I didn't know that I was literally going to be in this industry. I just thought that when I remember I auditioned for Alice in Wonderland, and I was like, I swear I was good. But maybe, wait, maybe I'm just being delusional. No, but I swear I was really good at that. But I got to respect his decision. So anyway, I just kind of, you know, just like moved on. And I was good at that. I was good at just like, okay, we'll move on next, right?
Yeah, it's great.
And yeah, well, it gets harder. As soon as you get into the industry, you're like, oh, God.
Yes, I want to find out all of the gossip.
Well, that happened and I graduated. I think it was 2014. And I got a flat. It was really good because I only rented like £90 per week. It was amazing.
Oh my God. In London?
I know. Yeah, in Harrow, which where my campus was. So I didn't really move out. I was like, yeah, I'm going to live in Shoreditch, Brick Lane. No, I was still in Harrow. Because it was just, you know, affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And I graduated. And there was something in my head. I was like, no, John, I need to continue acting. Because even during my uni, again, I still would go to workshops. So I think it was still ingrained in me that I was like, maybe I could do this. So I auditioned for this series of short films for the BFI. It's the British Film Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the people in the open audition were like, some of them were like trained actors. Others were rookies like me. And it was for this top casting director called Jane Ripley, and she did the first few seasons of Skins. She was the one who did the casting for that. And we just did this open audition workshop. I did my scene. It was quite raw. I think it was something to do where my character is dealing something with drugs. Something like that, and I just did it. Yeah, pretty much Skins topic. Yeah, I did it, and I was like, okay, I did well, and like, I'm glad I did that. It was quite refreshing. And the next day, I moved to the second stage. I was so shocked. I was like, oh my gosh, I was so happy to get through. Yeah, and then The second stage was with Jeremy Zimmerman, who's another top casting director. Now, this one was at the BFI, and it was, again, an open audition workshop with other people watching it.
Oh, wow.
So the stakes are kind of, like, high. It's like everyone's watching you. And then this dude is like, okay, so who wants to go first? Nobody wanted to put their hand up because everyone else was watching. And most of these guys were either young, up-and-coming directors or writers, set designers, you name it. And it was kind of a month where a festival was happening. So we were part of the Teenage Kick season. So it was all revolving around teenage issues. So we auditioned for these scripts that were pretty much original, all written by young up-and-coming writers. And he was asking, okay, who wants to audition first? And I literally just went, me. I'll just do it, because just to get over and done with. So I did it. And it was so, yeah, it was nerve-wracking, but I also felt really excited. It was almost like a play, because you're kind of performing it out. But because it was for screen, he's telling you to just play it down. And I'm like, okay, but there's loads of people watching us. I mean, I don't know what to do. And I was around, I think, 21 at the time. Yes, it was 8 years ago.
Oh, but wow.
It doesn't feel like 8 years ago, though. It feels like just last week. Because I can remember it vividly. And, I just did it. And then I think it was like a few days afterwards, I got the part.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And the craziest thing was, so they built the set. And on that week, it was my short film to be filmed. And there was like a whole crew, and we did that. And I used that film as my first showreel.
No
so
way.
That gave me a head start. And I would always be like, okay, so if I got this, that means I could get further. And that gave me that much more of a boost of confidence than I needed. And I did the same thing. Like I did a workshop at the Lyric Hammersmith, which is a beautiful theater. And they were looking for young up and coming artists who want to do theater in a pantomime. And the one that I auditioned for was Dick Whittington and his cat. And that was my first ever stage debut. Well, I was put through in a ringer, and I got through certain stages, and they picked like, I think, six of us. And that was a good training ground as well. Like, we did, I think, a solid 2.5 months of just working on stage, and especially working with other actors as well. You get to see how they do their techniques and how they work.
Incredible, though. Like,
in the same year. I did
the same year. Oh, yeah, the same year.
Yeah.
And what's mad is that you're obviously, like you said, amongst trained actors, and you've just come off a journalist degree at Westminster.
Yes. Yeah. Like, it's just mad. And that's why I always tell people, I generally try not to give too much advice because I'm still learning. But the general tip, like anyone, is like, mindset is key. If you know you can do it, anything is possible, really. There's no way of stopping you. And every time I always have to be grateful of, like, gosh, I started out doing a journalism degree, didn't go to drama school or anything like that. I still had like a need to perform because I've done amateur dramatics when I was young, but that was only a hobby. So saying that you want to be doing it as a career is almost kind of like a leap. It's like a leap of faith. Once I did that, so when I did my BFI short and then the Lyric Hammersmith one, that was when I tried to find an agent, because people always say you have to have an agent in order to get further, to get more opportunities.
And were you working at this point? As in, like, did you have a part-time job or?
Oh yeah, like loads of them.
Oh, okay.
It was such a hustle. And again, I'm so grateful because looking back, I was like, and that's the thing with my mindset. I'm like, I was completely broke. I'm pretty sure I was like over my overdraft. But in my mind, I'm like, no, I'm going to make up for it. So I'd like at least like two part-time jobs. I was paying rent. I was trying to scavenge for like any cheap things in Sainsbury's in order to cook. And I would work tirelessly and then do these auditions. When I had my first agent, and I was like, what am I doing? And there was like little times of like, oh, I don't know if this is for me. Why did I give up my degree? I could have just done like a stable job, you know, all those kind of, you know, voices in your head. I'm sure you know me, like, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like that kind of seed of doubt.
Totally.
Yeah. And I think there's like little successes. So when you have a little success, you gain a bit more confidence and a bit more knowledge.
It kind of wipes out all of the negative as well. You kind of like can't remember why you were feeling so bad that day. And then suddenly it's like everything's like amazing.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, everything's working out then. So I'm not just grinding just for nothing. Like literally you're waking up doing a job that you're not really passionate about, but it's paying the bills. But it's kind of like, it's paid, but it's not paid well.
Mm.
So then you're like, how am I going to pay rent? And so I did that for a couple of years. It wasn't until I didn't have an agent anymore, and then I had to find a new agent. It was over Christmas. And I literally, I think I was 23, 24, can't really remember. It was around that time. I was like, oh no, okay, do you know what? I am going to send every top agency that I can think of in London, I'll just send them a letter with my headshot and like the showreel I had from BFI and just like the credit. Actually, it was just one credit on my CV and just saying that I'm really a hard worker or blah, blah, blah. Also, here's a link to a private Vimeo video of me doing this monologue so you can see what I can do. And then I had offers over Christmas.
Really?
As soon as I sent, yeah. And I had a
How many did you send it to?
Like everyone.
Hundreds?
It would be, yeah. I think some of them were email and some of them were letter
form. Handwritten letters.
No, this wasn't handwritten. Right. This was just typed out and I just printed it out. But it was kind of like sculpted for each agency that I could see that I could fit into. I don't think it was 100, maybe less than that. But I literally just Googled, okay, who are the top agencies that I could be in the
I love roster. That though. We always tell that to people, you know, young people who are trying to get their first job. And it's just like, don't do the traditional route. Be creative. Try and, you know, get to people in other ways. And it definitely does work.
Mine was just, you know, a little bit of hope and a little bit in better. And
yeah, but I like that. It worked.
I had a meeting in Manchester because obviously it was over Christmas. I was back with my family, you know, over holiday. And then I went to Manchester. They liked me. So I was kind of like, okay, I've got a couple of more interviews and they'll let you know. And one of them was 42, who is my agent now. And now they're a big agency. But back then, they were just kind of quite new. I think they've only started a couple of years. And my agent was like, I could see potential. And let's see, you know, let's work together. And they're still my agent now. It's mad.
such a great story, though. I love it. These are the best, you know, moments. And you look back and then you look at today and you're like, God, yeah, you can only kind of connect the dots looking back.
Talk us through, obviously, your Netflix show, which is amazing. You're a lead Asian actress, which I think is incredible. And I do actually think that Netflix has done a great job in that, in terms of really diversifying its actresses and actors. Was that like a big break for you, or actually was that just one of many, and from auditioning no money five part-time roles to Netflix? Talk about that moment.
Gosh, it's mad, isn't it? I remember this very vividly. Again, it felt like it just happened last week. I auditioned for that. I just did an indie film. We were filming in Kent, and then final week in London, and I got an email about Get Even. I legit, kid you not, I just had a shower and I had a long day doing back-to-back scenes. I was like, should I tape for this or should I not? So thankfully I did. And I was in my Nirvana t-shirt, like ready to go to bed. And I just did this like quite quickly. And then I got a recall. So I came into in a London studio, and then I saw the director, Sarah Walker, Andy Brierley, who's the casting director, and Josh, who's one of the producers. And they were like, oh my gosh, like I really liked your tape. You were wearing that Nirvana t-shirt, weren't you? I was like, oh yeah. He's like, was that purposeful for the character? And I wish I would have said yes, but because I was like, I just can't lie, I was like, no. I was like ready to go to bed. Like, it was being really truthful. Anyway, I did that audition, and then I came back for another recall, and this was for a chemistry read. So a chemistry read is where you go with other actors and playing different parts. And we were pretty much chemistry reading with my love interest, who plays Dante, and then the other three girls who are the leads as well. And that was just like for a few scenes. I was only there for like 2 hours, and that was it. But most of the other people were doing like loads of callbacks. So I only did a self-tape and then two recalls. And I think the week after, I got the call. They were like, oh my God, you've got it. And can you please go to Manchester in a few days for the read-through, the official read-through with the rest of the new cast members? I was like, what? This is crazy. And then I think it was a few weeks after, we were on set. It was just mad. And at that time, I actually thought, you know what, maybe this is not for me. I should.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, not when I got Get Even, but before I auditioned for Get Even, I was like, I don't know if this is the career that I should stay on, you know.
Because you just hadn't got that break.
Yes. It was, yeah, you're right. It was kind of like I would always audition, and I would always miss out on somebody else. It would always go through to somebody else. I would always be that second person. Or I'd be like one of the few shortlisted people. And it's like,
it's so disheartening. It is. After, you know, not back. Sometimes you do just kind of want to hand in the towel.
But then that's the thing. Now that like I'm getting quite older, I'm 28 now, it's not about that. You shouldn't take it personally. Most of the time, it's about something else. Maybe you don't look right with this person. But in this industry, there's so many projects, you know, lining up. There's like Amazon, Hulu, Netflix, what else? Apple TV, Disney Plus.
Yeah, there's so many opportunities. Time.
Yeah, it's an amazing time for actors nowadays to really get their teeth into, and also
diverse actors.
Diverse, yes. and Get Even, that was really diverse in terms of the characters that we had. And I was going to say the show that I'll be in called Foundation, it's one of the most highly anticipated shows on Apple TV. That is like completely diverse. Like they've said it's Game of Thrones in space, but it's like the characters, and I kid you not, I'm so excited to watch it. Even though I don't have an iPhone anymore, I need to find like an Apple TV channel or they can send me a link, fingers crossed. And I see stories of like, it's not just that anymore. And I think that's why I was so proud of Get Even, because our characters were not stereotypical. Like, of course, we were put into a box. Like, we were, like, I was the jock. There was the nerd. There was the rebel, the popular kid. But we always spun it on its head. As you get to watch the show, it's not your typical stereotypical kind of. Oh, okay. And our characters are not based on the color of our skin. We're just there.
I love
Do you
that.
Know what I mean?
The Asian shy sidekick, you know.
Yes. And I think that's why I loved about Kitty Way. She was very minded, very tenacious, which I liked, very sporty. Like, I felt, oh my gosh, I was like, I'm fit now. Because I've been running around in the woods. But yeah, it was the character that I wish I saw when I was younger.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because I've always looked up to characters who are either really strong characters, but they're male.
Oh,
and you rarely see women, unless you see like Wonder Woman. That was not until I was a lot older. But yeah, you rarely see that. And it's only like in comic books that you see it. You don't really see it in film or screen, because every time people would say, oh yeah, like, oh, this female character's great, it's only because she's written well. You always see women being portrayed as like the damsel in distress, or she's just the girlfriend or the sidekick. Sometimes, totally. Like, you don't need to have a love interest. Like, she could be her own little person and still have things to do just as much as a guy would be in a film. And I think that's what's exciting nowadays, is that we have plenty of projects. And every time I get an email, I get really excited with new up-and-coming writers who are creating scripts that are very out there. And there are a lot of them that are fully representative of the world nowadays.
Incredible journey, though. And I'm just so, again, excited and happy for you that you've kind of got to this, you know, you've come so far, but you've also got so much opportunity ahead of you, which is just I can't wait to watch you
Thanks so much for listening to this week's Phenomenal and Asian podcast. I'll be releasing new episodes every week, and if you enjoyed this episode, make sure you follow us on Instagram at phenomenal.asian for all the latest updates.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.